I can't believe the battery hasn't died yet. It always feels like it lasts for such a short amount of time, usually. It's not an uncommon occurrence that it just dies on my bus ride home. But it's been so long, and it's still working. Isn't that odd? Maybe it hasn't been as long as I think. Maybe time is stretching out. Seconds becoming minutes. Minutes becoming hours. How long will my dying moment feel then? Perhaps it will be eternal, a never-ending flight strip with no takeoff, forever on the brink of flying, but you never leave the ground. I can't feel my legs. Maybe they died ahead of schedule. Oh well. I guess I should get to the good stuff, huh? You don't want to hear me prattle on about my situation too long. That's not what you're here for. No, you want to know the truth about what happened to me. And I want to tell you. You know, I always loved planes. There's a certain kick you get from getting onto the airplane, and then, only hours later, you get out and you're across the world. I always thought that would be the closest thing I would ever experience to being magically transported to another world. The Organist's Son, Episode 4, Across the Threshold. Flynn did not look very pleased at our arrival. He was stood in his doorway, squinting as though even the light of the cloudy afternoon was too harsh for his eyes, brows furrowed, arms crossed. "Who is that?" His voice was slightly rough, and it made his already unwelcoming words seem even harsher. I swallowed and made an effort to sound unfazed by his hostility. I knew I probably shouldn't have come over unannounced, but this was a worse welcome than anticipated. "This is Isabella. I've been thinking a lot about ways we might come in contact with your father. That has to be the first step, right?" "Can we come in?" I asked, not wanting to have the rest of the conversation in the doorway. Flynn seemed to consider my request for a while, clearly a bit unwilling, but eventually he relented, stepping aside and letting us into the house. "And how is this Isabella going to help contact my father exactly?" Flynn had not changed his combative stance even after letting us in. We had moved to the living room, and me and Isabella were sitting on the couch. Flynn was standing, restlessly tapping his leg. "She's a medium. Since you said the door was closed, I figured we might want to find an alternative method of contacting him. I thought that someone that specializes in contacting people in other worlds might be of help." Jesus, a medium? You thought involving someone that lies to vulnerable people for a living would be useful? I almost shirked back at his mocking tone. I'd never seen him act like this before, and it wasn't a side I particularly liked. "Oh my," Isabella whispered, seemingly a bit shocked as well. I glanced over at her, nervous that she might have been horribly offended by his words. If she was, it didn't show in her expression, which was as calm and controlled as ever. "I was just trying to help," I said. Flynn's shoulders dropped, and his stance finally seemed to lose some of that combative energy. "I'm sorry. That was a bit harsh, but I don't think this is a good idea." "Why not? Do you have another idea?" "No, I don't, but..." I didn't let him finish that thought. "What is the harm in trying, then? You said yourself you've tried to get the door open for years, and nothing has worked. Maybe you have the wrong approach. If we try an alternative method of getting in contact, maybe that will work better. I say we try." "Fine. If you think this might be something, go ahead. Worst case scenario, we waste some time. He sounded apathetic. I was sure he still very much believed this wouldn't work. Isabella put her hands together, friendly smile once again stretching across her face. Well, it's been nice to meet you, Flynn. I do hope I can prove you wrong about my profession. If you don't mind, could we get started right away? Flynn shrugged. Sure. He didn't move, just looked at Isabella expectantly. We were thinking we'd do it in the basement. You know, with the door being there, it might make the connection stronger. He gave an amused chuckle, but still started to move out of the room, leading the way toward the basement. The stairs to the basement felt unnaturally long somehow, as though we were winding our way into the very center of the earth. Flynn had brought a flashlight, since the light bulb apparently hadn't been replaced in many years, and the bouncing light made the shadows move, almost as if they were alive and dancing circles around us, and our steps echoed loudly in the darkness, the dusty smell of stale air coming up to meet us. While the basement was covered in furniture and boxes, the door was still impossible to miss. It stood in the middle of the room, in a square of uncovered floor that was maybe the only free space in the entire basement. It was painted a dark, cool green color, and was adorned with an ornate knocker in the shape of a face with its mouth wide open, and though it seemed to perhaps once have been painted, the color had long since worn off in everything but the deepest crevices, exposing the brass underneath. I felt nothing when I looked at it. No chill down my spine. No inexplainable dread that squeezed my insides like a vice. No dark premonitions. Nothing. For a door that led to another world, it didn't look particularly remarkable. Really, the oddest thing about it was the placement. And if I didn't know any better, I'd just assume that someone had knocked down the walls around it, or perhaps moved it for restoration or something. Carefully avoiding the contents of a box that had fallen and spilled open, stuffed animals and cutlery in a meaningless pile on the floor, I walked around to the other side. Though the light of the flashlight did not illuminate this side, it still seemed to look as it should. Just a door, standing in the middle of a basement. When I came around to the other side again, Isabella had already started setting a few things up. She knelt on the dusty floor of the basement, carefully drawing something into the bare cement with a piece of chalk. She had placed a candle, yet unlit, next to her, and her face displayed a deep focus. Flynn stood a bit off to the side, eyes fixed squarely on the door. His face bore a strange expression, jaw set in a sullen determination, as tired and world-weary as it was hopeful. I could tell from his expression that he didn't think it would work. I could also tell that he hoped it would. It's ready. Isabella's voice ripped us both from our thoughts. On the floor in front of her was a pentagram of white chalk. In the center of it she had placed a single candle. I knelt beside her, but Flynn didn't move from his position, though he seemed at least to be paying attention. What do we do now? I asked, unsure of what to do with myself. Now I try to contact Mr. Southard, she said. It might take a few minutes, and it's very important that you do not speak until I give you the signal. This is such bullshit, Flynn muttered from the corner. Please, love, if you would just indulge me for now, that would be great. Isabella's voice was calm and patient, almost motherly. It did not seem to calm Flynn at all, though. Rather, his face contorted in anger, and for a moment I worried he might storm off or start yelling, but instead he just scoffed indignantly and turned away. Isabella turned back to the pentagram. She took a breath and closed her eyes. She was saying something under her breath, speaking quickly, but I couldn't quite catch the words. By the time she was done, I had begun to twist uncomfortably where I sat, but just as it was becoming unbearable, she opened her eyes and fell quiet. He's here, she whispered. What do you want to ask him? I looked over at Flynn. He was definitely paying attention now, eyes fixed on Isabella. I, he stuttered. Ask him where he is. Isabella leaned her head back, lips moving though no sound came out. After a few seconds, she spoke. He says he's somewhere dark. He's trapped. He can't get out. Tell him I'm coming to save him, Flynn said. He says that you don't have to. He loves you very much. He doesn't want you to get hurt. He asks if you remember the blue teddy bear. He says, Flynn interrupted her, his voice strained. Tell him that I'm coming to save him. He really thinks that. This time Flynn barely even let her start. His voice was rough with emotions. Despite what he might have said earlier, this seemed to be affecting him greatly. Tell him that I don't care. He can say whatever he wants to me once I find him. Isabella paused. The connection is breaking up. Is there anything more you want him to know? I'm going to save him. I want him to know that. Okay. There was an uncomfortable tension permeating the air between us. Flynn still stood in his corner, face stubbornly turned away, as though he didn't want us to look at him. Isabella started wiping at the pentagram, practiced movements quickly removing the chalk, though a faded outline could still be seen where the dust stubbornly clung to the rough surface. I got up. For a second, I just stood there, unsure how to proceed now. I wanted to break the silence somehow, make the air less heavy with unspoken emotion. Who knows, maybe he unlocked the door on the way out, I said, jokingly. None of them seemed very entertained, but I still stepped up to the door, prepared to make a fool of myself just for the pleasure of having something to do. I grabbed the doorknob, prepared to rattle it uselessly in a crude attempt at comedy. I twisted it, pulled the door toward me, and just like that, the door was open. The room on the other side of the door was dimly lit, but from where I stood, I could easily see the striped wallpaper, the carpet. I stared, mouth agape, eyes wide. However impossible it was that there was another world on the other side of this door, there was. It should have been the bare cement of the basement, but there were no boxes or cobwebs or ancient rotting furniture. It was impossible. Slowly, I extended a shaking hand to check if it was real, not just a picture or a mirage. My hand went through, into the room. It was so easy. No flash of light or weird force field to pass through. It was so natural, as if I'd just put my arm into any old door and not just done something impossible. You opened it. Flynn's voice was strangled, as if saying the words aloud were a difficult task. There was so much emotion packed into that one sentence. Shock, disbelief, triumph, confusion, and maybe, though I did not pay it much mind at the time, a note of fear. Slowly he stepped toward me, eyes alight, steps filled with restrained energy. I can't believe it! It's open! It's open! His voice rose in excitement until it fully morphed into a shout of joy. Holy shit! Isabella had stood up too now. Eyes glued to the doorway in front of us, face contorted in utter awe. She stepped closer, eyes still never leaving the door, almost as if her feet were moving on their own. At last, all three of us stood side by side, shoulder to shoulder, in the doorway of a door that shouldn't lead anywhere, but somehow, impossibly, did. It was, amazingly yet irrefutably, magic. I think it took all of us a while to collect our thoughts, because the silence between us prevailed for quite some time. But eventually, even this moment of unadulterated awe had to pass, give way to necessary discussion. Because despite its reality-defying properties, the door was just a door, stationary, silent, unable to act on its own. Like all doors, for it to do anything, someone had to use it, had to open it, had to enter it. What do we do now? I was the one who finally vocalized the question I'm sure we were all asking. Flynn was quick to respond. We go in and find him. He said it as if it were obvious, as if there really was no other way this could proceed. Immediately after speaking, he started walking, as if my question had awoken him from his state of shock, and he was free to move again. Wait here, I'll go get some things, he shot back as he briskly moved toward the stairs. Wait, Isabella called out to him. He paused, one foot already on the first step of the stairs. What is it? He asked, impatience clearly coloring his voice. What do you mean, we are going in? Is your intention seriously for us to go through that thing right now? Isabella did not speak in her usual calm voice. In fact, she was almost yelling. She sounded horrified. Flynn sighed. Listen, if you don't want to come, you don't have to. But I'm going. It was almost a whisper, words uttered quietly, calmly. Yet there was an intensity to them, a burning, unflinching determination in his voice that displayed more conviction than the loudest battle cry. I really, truly don't think there was anything, anything at all, that could have stopped him, or even made him wait. He was a man obsessed. Flynn turned again, long, slender legs taking two steps at a time as he ascended the stairs. Isabella turned to me, eyes wide and frenzied. What the hell is this? Her tone was almost accusatory. You know as much as I do. I told you everything back at your shop, remember? My answer was a bit half-hearted. In honest, the whole thought of having a conversation like this right then annoyed me. After all, there was a real-life magical doorway to another world right in front of me, and no conversation could compare to that. I took a few steps to the side, examining how the small part of the room I could see changed. Sure enough, I could see a bit further down the corridor. It didn't reveal much, especially since the only light source was the tiny flame of the candle in Isabella's pentagram. But still, it proved it was not a static picture. This is crazy, Isabella muttered. I would think you were more accustomed to the supernatural, with your job and all, I said, digging up my phone from my pocket. Well, yes, of course. But nothing like this. She gestured toward the door, the movement too exaggerated, almost cartoonish. Yeah, it's really fucking awesome. I can't believe I get to see this. Last week I had no clue about any of this, and now, here we are. I smiled at her, and she returned the gesture, though on her part it looked incredibly forced, more of a grimace than a smile, really, miles away from the easy one she'd worn before. Yes, here we are, she looked down, seemed to get lost in her thoughts. Could you move over a bit? I want to take a picture. She almost seemed to be startled by my words, though our conversation had just ended. Nonetheless, she moved aside. I snapped a couple of pictures, the flash of blinding light in the dark room, crisp white and stark black, a moment of perfect contrast, fleeting, fading quick until the lines between light and shadow were blurred again. The door did, in fact, turn up on pictures. I took a short video of it, too, just to have a bit more proof that this was real. Not that I truly believed it would be much use in convincing anyone. Occam's razor. Which was more likely, that there was a door that led to another world, or that the evidence was doctored? I stepped closer to the door, once again edging past it to see the other side. I didn't quite know what I had expected. Perhaps a swirling void, or maybe just a mirrored version of the same corridor. That was not what it was, though. Instead, the door was simply shut on this side. When I reached to open it, I realized that it lacked a handle. It was at this point that Flynn returned, a large backpack slung over his shoulder. I stepped out from behind the door to meet him. His eyes were focused squarely on the door, a certain nervous energy in his stance, in the way he fiddled with one of the straps. He inhaled sharply. "Okay," he said. "I'm going in now." He looked up, looked into my eyes. "Are you coming?" Was I coming? Honestly, I hadn't really considered it properly. I had been too wrapped up in the incredible impossibility of it all, in seeking to understand and document. But now came the time to do more than that. To walk right into the impossible. If I went, I couldn't be sure what would happen. I couldn't even be sure I would come back. The safe thing, the sane thing, would be to leave. To go home to my apartment and let Flynn deal with his search alone. We were only strangers, after all. I owed him nothing. It should have been the easy choice. But I've never been one for easy. I've always been the one to go one step too far. Look a little too deep to pry and search and risk it all for the mere promise of true excitement. It always brought me grief, from bruises and scraped knees to broken bones, broken hearts, broken friendships. But I just can't help myself, can I? And this was it. What I'd been looking for all my life. It was the start of an adventure, a real adventure. A chance to live a life more exciting than anything reality had to offer. A chance to be exceptional. So how could I stop here, at the threshold? I could feel the excitement waking in me now, an eager, expectant joy flowing through the core of my being like a drug. I was going to another world. "Yes, I'm coming," I said the words like I was sure. And I guess I was. It didn't feel like a risk then, just an opportunity. "Okay, I don't have a bag for you, but if we stick together, it won't be a problem. I've brought enough food and water to last us a few days. We shouldn't be that long, but, you know, just in case." This is insanity. Isabella had been quiet through our conversation. Judging by her words, she did not approve of what we were doing. "You're just going to walk in there? Right now?" "I take it you're not coming," Flynn said. "Of course I'm not coming. Do you even know what to expect on the other side of that door? You might not be able to get back, and what then? You cannot seriously be doing this. Listen, lady, I have been trying to get to this point for years. I'm doing this, and I'm doing it now. And if I don't come back, so be it. I'm not waiting another fucking minute. So if you're not coming, then please leave my house." Flynn's voice was cold, filled with uncontained annoyance. Isabella scoffed. "When am I getting paid, then?" she said, placing her hands on her hips. Flynn's eyebrows shot up. "We're paying you?" he asked, sounding genuinely confounded. "Of course." I rummaged through my pockets for my wallet. "How much is it?" $150. She said. "Do you take card?" "I don't." "Well, I don't have that much cash," I said. She sighed. "Give me what you have. I guess you can pay me the rest if you get back." She blew out her candle, picked up her chalk, and just like that, she had left. It was just me and Flynn in the basement. He gave me a flashlight and a smile, straightened the straps of his backpack. There was no more build-up than that. A conversation about money, a flashlight, a smile. It wasn't extraordinary in the slightest. Yet those were the last minutes I spent in reality. Perhaps it's more fitting like that.
that it truly was ordinary up until the end. I smiled back at Flynn, and then we stepped across the threshold.